Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Grounded with Earth Optics. Once again, my name is Gunnar Bodvarsson and I'm joined with Piper Smith. Piper, it's been a while since I feel like I saw you. How are you doing today?
It has been a while. We, recorded last before Thanksgiving, which wasn't that long ago, but feels like a year ago somehow. I don't know if the holidays just have some time warp that you get stuck in.
Something like that. It was, it's been a busy week for me. I'm guessing it's been a busy week for you too. Winding up.
Yeah, I thought it would slow down with half the country freezing, but it has not slowed down yet.
Yeah, speaking of half the country freezing, I've got some exciting news for everybody here. I got a brand new ice house for ice fishing, which Piper, I'm sure you do a lot of that down in Florida.
I am in Florida, and when you said ice house, I was like, what is an ice house? It didn't even occur to me.
I remember, forget who it was, but I was explaining to someone what ice fishing is like, and it never occurred to me that, you know, if you're not from kind of the upper Midwest or another area where everything freezes over, that's completely foreign. The idea of driving a big truck out on 8 inches of ice and then punching a bunch of holes in it. In any case, Mark Smith from Carbon Country, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you do?
Yeah, sure. So Carbon Country is founded on the idea that adding agrivoltaics and carbon removal can radically alter the economic viability, sustainability, and resiliency of small and medium-sized farms. And so we're just crazy enough to try it ourselves. We've bought a 74-acre farm in Southern Maryland, in Charles County, Maryland. And that's our sort of pilot project. And we're crazy enough to put an offer on our next property, which has been accepted, which is a 59-acre farm about 15 minutes away that we can service from the same group. So, we're putting the idea into practice and inshallah, you know, it'll work.
Okay, before we jump into that, because there is a lot of exciting stuff to unpack there, Mark, how did you find your way to this? Like, what, tell us about yourself. How did you end up in this?
Yeah. So prior to founding Carbon Country in February of this year, I had a 12-year stint as the Director of Government Affairs for the Clorox Company. Originally I was hired to establish their international government, relations, sort of area. They were in 110 different countries and didn't really have a lot of those capabilities. So that was cool. And then, I tend to do this, with, four different jobs, leading the work on the GLAAD business, which was really exciting. So designing the sort of policy framework for composting and recycling in Canada and at the state level in the United States. And then for the Brita business, some really exciting work to basically identify the opportunity that having a point of use filter that was effective for lead could have on the lead line, lead service line issue, where 13 million homes in America have unsafe levels of lead that they're consuming every day. And that just happened to be a multi-billion-dollar opportunity for Clorox. And so it was kind of my passion that I was working on to start that business and see it off and then to help it along by, you know, putting little nuggets in the bipartisan infrastructure bill. I'm most proud of putting a provision in the lead and copper rule improvement that required municipalities to provide point of use filters for any community where they exceeded the lead level, lead action level for multiple sort of terms. So protecting millions of particularly children, which really was my passion. If you're subjected to unsafe levels of lead early on in life, your IQ is permanently lower. Wow. And that was just too much, like when you can solve the problem for $50. So that's what I was working on before then. How is it relevant to today? You know, before that, I was doing waste energy in the sugarcane sector. I founded a company with one of my buddies from Georgetown Business School. And it was an amazing idea. We had really terrible timing. So like right as we were about to launch, global financial crisis like took off, and we were very sort of private equity focused, and basically private equity went away for 2 years. So this is my attempt to kind of go back to that with another twist, having sort of been on the inside of the Fortune 500 challenges on, you know, a net zero goal, and just sort of sustainability just writ large. So like thinking about like, well, what could we actually do about it that would be really actionable and meaningful? So yeah, that's a little bit of my background.
Yeah, I mean, those are no small credentials. And then to shift from kind of that level of business and organization to like, you know, this, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, now I'm like trying to fight with my livestock guard dog to keep him from like escaping and like the chickens from attacking one another and stuff like that. So very different levels of challenge.
Yeah. It's a different pace. How are you adjusting to the difference in pace, like personally, between the two kind of worlds?
I love it. I mean, we're trying to build something really big. So the challenges are huge. And, you know, we're trying to pioneer in new areas, which is, you know, always difficult. So like today I had a really challenging permitting conversation, you know, like trying to explain a new carbon removal practice to people. So there's a lot of elements that are really similar. But, you know, this time it's personal. It's not, I mean, I've always sort of had that personal quest inside of the work that I was doing. That's what.
Definitely. So, yeah, it sounds like you are definitely working to solve large problems, and you've got a lot of experience, you know, kind of addressing these in different ways. Could you tell us a little bit more specifically what agrivoltaics is? I mean, I don't even know how to spell that.
It was funny. I was talking to someone yesterday who kept on saying agrivoltaics, and I was like, well, you know, why not, right? So agrivoltaics is very, the concept is that you're doing solar and agriculture. You know, one of the concerns about, you know, the increase of solar development, particularly on farmland, is the idea that it would take, you know, productive land, you know, out of commission. And so agrivoltaics really is an elegant solution of saying and instead of or. So in our case, we are grazing ruminants, sheep under our panels. And, you know, we're really excited. And this is where sort of the connection with Earth Optics come in. To really detail and illustrate the impact that rotational grazing practices under our panels, plus the application of biochar, can have on our land. So our objective is to produce energy, produce amazing lamb, and leave our soil much better off than when we started.
It's like a triple threat both ways. It's a triple threat with the practice changes, the biochar, the rotational grazing, and, you know, the solar, and then a triple threat kind of on the outcome too.
Exactly. So we're really excited about that practice. The land that we have is, you know, relatively small, so probably not you know, economic to do cattle, but that is certainly something that we have in mind as we think about expanding. And there's some really exciting work that White Oaks Pastures and Silicon Ranch have done together with DOE on the solar grazing of cattle. So that's another area of, you know, hopefully in the future that we'll be able to address. But what we're doing is grazing. There's also folks that are, you know, growing sort of shade tolerant crops. You can think about like a broccoli or maybe some sort of lettuce or other crops that would do well with a little shade. So there are a lot of folks exploring what other options there might be, even for some sort of, you know, row crop type situation.
Definitely. Could you explain a little bit more why sheep make the most sense for your specific operation and how you kind of landed where you are, you know, with respect to the farm that you're currently working on and additional farms that you're bringing in?
Yeah. Well, sheep are not as tall as cows. So that's, you know, that's a really simple reason. And so they fit, you know, really nicely under. You really don't have to change the racking situation. If you go up a little bit of height in the rack, you sort of bump up against OSHA regulations. And so you have to be like strapped into something while you're like, you know, there's all sorts of things as you start elevating the racking system. So really, they're kind of the most plug and play option for the current sort of solar setup. You don't have to really innovate on the racking side. The other thing is that you know, for a smaller farm, in our case, we have like 20 acres of pasture. You know, it's hard to put a lot of cattle on a small holder plot like that, and sheep. Do really well. Really what you want in terms of the regenerative agriculture perspective and the soil is, you know, hoofs and poop, you know, and so sheep, you know, fit nicely into, you know, that smaller land area and they're working out really nicely. I've been very, you know, I'm burgeoning shepherd. And so, that whole process of learning to do that has been really cool, and to me, it's a little less intimidating than cows.
Yeah, yeah. I could imagine that for sure.
Do the animals like rub up against the panels, or are they just at like clearance height, so they're not actually they're like going completely underneath?
There are sort of columns or whatever, you know, that, yeah, that they may rub up against, but it hasn't been shown to be a real issue. The other thing that's great about the sheep is they're really pretty gentle, and so there's been a whole industry that's cropped up of solar grazing where flocks of sheep are mop grazed underneath solar panels instead of mowing. And so you can imagine just both from an expense perspective, but also from a potential damage perspective, if you run that mower into an area that has a lot of pebbles or something, yeah, that's not a good outcome for, you know, solar panels. So having a sheep that can come in there, easily access everything, right? It's pretty tough to run a mower, you know, under the panels and then be gentle. And then, you know, revitalize the soil at the same time. It works out pretty cool. And then the other thing that's really interesting is that, and I sort of heard about this, but I didn't really understand it until like intuitively until I started being a shepherd, but like sheep are always looking for shade.
Mm-hmm.
And the panels, they're like in heaven. You know, I mean, you'll get like 30 sheep and they'll like be all under like one like shadow of a particular tree in the middle of your pasture. And you're just like, damn, like, man, if we put panels, these guys are going to be in heaven.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is that they need less water. They're under less heat stress and they gain more weight. And so not only do they do amazing things for the soil and the environment, but it actually, like in terms of productivity of raising awesome sheep, I mean, they're actually in a better place. So it's a really cool synergistic way to approach added value in agriculture, you know, by combining those two.
Definitely. I mean, I was just about to ask you a question that I almost don't want to ask now. And really, it's, you know, I imagine starting a farm of sorts is super complex. And I also imagine starting a, you know, creating a solar array is super complex. And so marrying those two systems has to be like exponentially complex. But it sounds like they're really synergistic from the standpoint of they you know, benefit each other, and they almost might streamline each other from a standpoint. Has that been the case, or
think there's synergies on a number of different levels, right? The first one is by keeping the land in production. The principal challenge, I think, for the solar industry, particularly in farmland, is the right to operate. And so when, you know, you can assure zoning folks or the permitting people that, you know, you're not taking this productive land, out of an agricultural use, but that you're adding solar in a synergistic way, it's a very different conversation. So that is sort of where, you know, we start. And then obviously, if you're saving money compared to mowing, that's amazing. If you're doing wonderful things for the soil, that's incredible. If the sheep end up being happier and fatter, that's even better. You know what I mean? So it's like, it really comes together quite nicely. And I think if you start designing these things to work together from the start, I think it's actually better, you know, when you conceive of it from the beginning that way. So, you know, you think about like, oh, well, how are you going to cordon off your pastures with where your rows are for, you know, your solar or whatever. You can think about that from the inception and design your infrastructure such that everything will work together well. But yeah, I mean, my problem is I just love to layer on additional complexity. So I'm not only doing that, but I'm layering on like carbon removal and stuff like that. But I love that. So I guess that may be my character flaw, but hopefully it'll become a defensible mode for us because no one else is crazy enough to try it, you know.
You said you love to layer on. So like what you mentioned, biochar, what are some of the other layers to this that we like haven't touched on yet?
Yeah. So our sort of insight was that, you know, rather than the traditional framework where someone comes in and leases the land from a farmer for 40 years to do a solar array or 30 years or whatever it is, you know, our concept is like, hey, let's go in and own the land. And when we own the land, the optionality for us just like opens up because there's no inherent conflict of interest with the landowner and us as a lessee. And then all sorts of other optionality opens up. So the thing for me was I started looking at all these ranches, and a lot of them had like heavily wooded areas as well. And so I was thinking, wow, you know, I wonder what we could do with the wood. And I had a business in Kenya where we were turning like waste wood, like sawdust and wood waste, into wood pellets to sell to industrial boilers. So I was thinking, you know, I knew a little bit about that. And then when I was learning more about the solar grazing and soil carbon, I discovered biochar. And I was like, wow, this is really cool and synergistic too. Imagine if I could turn the wood from the forest management of my forest into biochar and then apply it as a soil amendment and, you know, sink carbon and capture water and nitrogen and, you know, make the soil even better, as well as like sequester carbon at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so, that turned into, well, let's build the first large scale biochar plant in Maryland on the farm as well. So, that's what we're attempting to do. And then I discovered this practice called wood vaulting, which is the easiest explanation is like reverse coal. So you think about coal as organic matter that has been captured underground for many years and you know, gone from leaves in a bog to, you know, a chunk of coal, right?
Yep.
In this case, you're taking limbs and sort of smaller logs from either that have fallen from a tree or as a result of logging that would be waste. So that would be either burned or disposed of some other way, like maybe in a landfill, et cetera. And instead, and both of those activities release carbon into the environment. Of taking that same log and basically burying it in anoxic soil, you know, below the level where life is happening. So that's generally sort of 6 feet or so, and sequestering that carbon for thousands of years. So that seemed really interesting. I was like, wow, you know, my whole concept is that I can layer all these things, and I can literally layer rotational grazing on top of wood vaulting. And then put put solar panels on top and then apply biochar, and like all of this works together,
yeah.
And creates this amazing, you know, thing. So that's another carbon removal practice that we're you know, seeing if we can incorporate into our business strategy. And then finally, you know, I am interested in enhanced rock weathering, which is basically using basalt or similar minerals and crushing it into fine dust so that when it interacts with rain, it ends up sort of sequestering carbon in that process. And that's really kind of like a substitute for lime that you would use in a field. So it's like, well, why not, right? You know? So that's kind of the mentality, you know. If we own it, why not try it? And this might just turn out to be like a really cool opportunity to add lots of value that maybe farmers hadn't fully appreciated, and hopefully create a model like, you know, we can only buy so many farms ourselves, but like that would be replicable by other medium-sized or small-sized farmers and really, you know, be transformational in terms of helping make the farm viable from an economic perspective, but also like really powerful from a sustainability and a resiliency perspective.
I did not know what wood vaulting was, so I just learned a very new thing. That's awesome and amazing. And you mentioned two things. You mentioned one, because my next question, and maybe Gunnar, if you had one, I'm cutting you off, I'm sorry. But my next question was like, okay, how do you scale this? Because you're doing it on like a 79-acre farm and you're growing to your second one. But you mentioned like, right, buying farms yourself and then farmers. So like, I'd love to kind of dive into your plans to grow it.
Yeah. So our objective, like as Carbon Country, is to build a REIT that would have, you know, 30 or 40 of these properties, right? And that we would take, you know, right now I'm in the dad Uber stage of life. So, you know, I need to be within, you know, reasonable commuting distance of soccer practice, you know?
Totally.
So my radius is, it's like 2 hours from my home. So, you know, if I could assemble, you know, until my kids are in college, assemble a sort of mid-Atlantic portfolio of, you know, farms that would fit our criteria. And, you know, I'm really excited about the idea of a land asset, like kicking off amazing cash flows from carbon removal, renewable energy, and agriculture, you know?
Yeah.
And I want, like, thinking about the future, like, I think those are all income streams that I want to have exposure to.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're sort of uncorrelated, right? And so that you're kind of, you know, naturally, like, hedging inside, you know, your own operation. And then, you know, beyond like what we physically can do ourselves and what, you know, hopefully we'll be able to raise the money to be able to do that, like if we're successful, but, you know, hopefully we can also provide sort of a template that people can take with ideas that, that we've, you know, gone through the pain and suffering of proving out, and that they can replicate in whatever way makes sense for their farm, and hopefully, you know, transform, you know, what is a lot of times these smaller farms are, you know, really struggling assets, that the kids don't want to stay on. The parents are like deeply in debt and, you know, approaching retirement age or already in retirement age and, you know, just trying to hang on into like a legacy asset that could then be passed on to the next generation. And the next generation could get excited about because they're making renewable energy and saving the planet by like sequestering carbon and stuff. So, you know, that's kind of the, you know, the goal as we see it in terms of the scalability and, you know, hopefully we can, you know, stumble our way into something that would be, you know, replicable and interesting for other people to emulate.
Yeah.
You know, what I think is really exciting about what you're doing is you're incorporating all these different ways, like you said, that are all kind of interdependent but independent, to sequester carbon. And you know, as you continue to grow, that's going to serve as such a terrific showcase of, look, there's, you know, there's all these different things that you can do, and you know, it's always context dependent for what is going to work best on, you know, any given farm. I'm here in Minnesota, so certain things are going to work better here than where you are on the East Coast, and Piper's down in Florida.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's cool to see how you're, you know, I don't want to say like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks, but you know, you kind of have, and it's turned into this like beautiful lasagna now of all these different layers.
Yeah, you know, it was like I went down that rabbit hole and I kept on finding, you know, different passageways, and I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe they all like come together. And so hopefully that will work out that way.
What does the operation of all those systems look like? Like, is that heavily intensive? Like, when is it like you're just like full-time running all those things? Or, I mean, I hope not, because you're planning to scale it, right? And so, like, how do you get those things kind of moving in a way where you can sustain it?
Yeah.
And still be Uber dad?
Right. Well, that's to be determined. But the concept, at least, is that, you know, I think we can do sort of like a hub and spoke. It doesn't make sense to put a biochar facility on every piece of land, but if we can have a biochar facility that's of scale and then have surrounding farms that we could service basically with the same team, you know, in terms of the agrivoltaics, you know, the OPEX on the solar stuff is pretty minimal, you know, it's like, oh, let's squeegee it, like to make sure that it's efficient. And like, if something happens, make sure that it's fixed or whatever, and then move the sheep every couple days, you know? So you could visualize a couple of people with a couple of trucks, like, you know, handling that. And the other piece that we're really excited about, and I kind of stumbled upon this, like myself in my own, like fumbling around, like in the dark, trying to figure this out. But, you know, like, when I started out, like I was naive enough to think that a beginning farmer loan was actually for beginning farmers. Well, yeah, it's not, right? So it was like, oh, you know, it was like, oh, you know, I'm so glad to talk to you, USDA, like about the beginning farmer loan. And, you know, I'm thinking about buying this farm. And they're like, well, have you been an operator or owner of a farm for 3 years? And I was like, no, this is a beginning farm loan, isn't it? Oh, well, sorry, you got to, you know, be the owner operator for 3 years in order to qualify for like, and I was like, oh, okay, whatever, man. Like, you know, obviously, this is an incredible barrier that doesn't make sense for anybody who wants to start a farm. And so from that day on, I was like, I'm creating an apprentice program where we're going to take beginning farmers, we're going to give them experience that such that they could qualify for a USDA beginning farmer loan. Come work on our land, you know, do amazing stuff, learn cool things, and then go out and create your own farm. Same with carbon removal, same with electricians for utility scale solar. Like, let's get talented young people from local universities where, you know, investing specifically and generally kind of disadvantaged areas or economically depressed areas, that don't have a lot of opportunity. Let's take some of these amazing young people who have a lot of inspiration, give them an opportunity, and then set them off such that they can do amazing things. And so that's kind of part of our strategy in terms of like how we scale our team and how we, you know, get really amazing people to help us on our journey.
I have to tell you, Mark, I have a pretty jaded view of the world, although I think everyone who meets me says I'm positive, but I'm like really impressed with these, not only the layers, but like what seems like your true enthusiasm for like making the world a better place, but through like your business acumen and, you know, like an apprenticeship program, like on top of all the other things you just listed out, like that's a really awesome opportunity. And as someone who has like worked in ag and has an interest, you know, in farming, but has never done it, and I live in the city, like, you know, I could totally see that being that that would be the first question is like, well, how do you get into this? And how do you learn and how do you figure out how to start without, you know, risking it all and just buying a farm outright, which most people, myself included, like, you just can't go do that right on a given Tuesday. So
yeah, no, completely. So you know, I'm sort of in a stage of life where I just want to do triple bottom line things, you know, and that's really been my passion when I was working at Clorox. Like, so I mentioned the work on like setting up the composting and recycling sort of system. And then, you know, specifically around the lead and, you know, PFAS was the other thing I was working on. But like, you know, those were really things that I felt like I'm saving I'm like helping people be healthier and helping, you know, protect their children at the same time that I'm creating like multi-billion dollar opportunities for the company that I'm working on. And that's the same perspective that I have with this, is like, well, why not? Why can't I do those things together? I can uplift people and create awesome opportunities in my community while we're making lots of money. You know what I mean? Like, those shouldn't be mutually exclusive. And like, why make lots of money if you can't make other people that are around you, you know, if they can't experience and they can't benefit it as, you know, from it as well, particularly when you're doing it in a, you know, economically disadvantaged area. Like, we've got to be able to be able to pull those places up by doing awesome things. And so that's kind of like the ethos, I guess.
Yeah. For our listeners who don't know or haven't heard of triple bottom line, it's like people, planet, profit. It's like, let's make, you know, improve the state of the world for people. Let's improve the state of the world for the planet itself and the environment. And then like, let's make money while we're doing it. I think I summarized that pretty well.
But yeah, no, completely.
That's really cool. Mark, you know, you're doing a lot, and I imagine there's got to be other people helping you out. What, you know, what sort of stakeholders are you kind of working with to put these things together, or has it really been all you?
Well, it hasn't been all me. I was fortunate enough to find a co-founder who's, you know, equally crazy, you know, he. He was the director of operations for World Central Kitchen. And so, you know, I've mentioned our community ethos. And so like the idea of like, how do we interact with the community? Can we build those relationships in a way that helps us accomplish all of that? He had a lot of great experience there. And he was like, you know, single and, you know, willing to live in a shack, which is, you know, an important characteristic. So he's actually living on the farm. I commute there every day, but, you know, I can only be there because of Dad Uber from, you know, 10 to 2:30 every day. And he's actually living there and, you know, feeding the chickens and dealing with the dog at night and stuff like that. So, you know, that's been really incredible. And, you know, it's really lonely to try to do this by yourself. So like having someone that'd be like, Mark, you're crazy. Why the hell are you doing that? Or just, you know, be able to like, you know, discuss all of these things and split some of that work up is been really important. You know, beyond that, we don't have anybody else. It's just us two right now. But, you know, we've had like just been really lucky to have incredible collaborators. There's a a guy named Albert that has helped us, you know, do our financial modeling, sort of like moonlighting, which has been, you know, hugely beneficial. We've been very lucky to be to have K Street Capital as our seed investor. I've been a limited partner of the syndicate there for many years, and you know, have made some great relationships. And so they're also helping us. They have a sort of affiliated fractional CFO service. So we have like really smart people who we can bounce ideas off of that will tell us that we're crazy and support us when we're not. So like when I wanted to buy this new piece of land, they were like, "Why are you doing it?" You know, like why it was like, "Oh, you know, like here are the reasons." But like, you know what, that actually kind of makes sense. Oh, I'll help you raise money to do it. Like, awesome. You know what I mean? Like, so I couldn't do that myself, and so it's really great to have a ecosystem. And then hopefully, as we start generating cash and able to raise more money, we can expand the team. But you know, we're super, super small and mighty, you know, at this juncture.
How have you selected, you know, the couple of parcels that are now farms? Are you selecting like degraded land and rehabilitating it, or is there anything specific that you're looking for?
Well, without like, you know, spilling all of our proprietary beans, there are a number of things that we look at in terms of like selecting a site. One of the principal reasons that I kind of got excited to get back into this, and I was like, you know what, hell no, I'm not going to go get a job. I'm going to go do this, was when I read the Inflation Reduction Act. And so what we're doing is we're maximizing for the highest level of investment tax treaty, a tax credit under the Inflation Reduction Act. So there are a couple of things called disadvantaged communities and things called energy communities, which have 10% adders. So that's certainly a factor that we're looking at. The other is the transmission infrastructure. So do we have a substation that could take a certain amount of power? Do we have three-phase power to the land? How close is the you know, decent transmission capacity? How much would it take us to upgrade that? So like all of those sort of things. And then, you know, there's sort of typical environmental due diligence, like, are you in a flood zone, or, you know, like stuff like that, that would be an impediment to doing, solar or other things. So those are some of the principal things. And then obviously like what kind of infrastructure is on the land, you know, where is it relative to potential sources of inputs if we're going to be doing pyrolysis, right? Like biochar, you know, those type of things. But those are some of the principal things that we're taking a look at.
Gotcha. Very cool. I mean, it sounds like you're taking a pretty comprehensive approach to how you're identifying these different farms and really thinking through, you know,
we're everything. Trying our best, you know, I mean, you always discover something, you're like, ooh. You
know? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's been a whole lot of learning by doing. I mean, a lot of this is, you know, there's
absolutely. And yeah. And like the thing is that like, there's so much value in that. Like you can never learn the things. Like, for example, I found this whole new, hopefully, like, I'm going to do the first deal using this kind of financing for biochar in Maryland, like, because I kept on getting rejected for financing. You know what I mean? Like, and I wouldn't have known that, and I wouldn't have found this thing if I hadn't been rejected a million times, you know, by, like, bumping my head against the wall. So there's some things that you just kind of have to learn by doing, and in doing them, you discover stuff that's awesome. And so like, I think as a part of this process, we've discovered what I would call as like a couple of ripples in the force that are like replicable, that are super powerful in terms of like really taking our business to the next level in terms of the returns and our ability to do all the cool things that we're looking at.
That's awesome. And what is kind of, you know, the overarching goal of Carbon Country? Is it, you know, like we've already talked about kind of the triple bottom line, but in 10, 20 years, what do you really want to see as kind of an outcome?
Well, our goal really, like if you would put it at a sort of, you know, objective level, like not a business objective, but like the impact level, is to kind of transform the economic reality and the sustainability impact of smallholder farms. And like if you look at the latest like farm census, you know, what really stood out to me is that, you know, and I may be a little bit off on these statistics, I'd have to go back, but it's like 97% of the money in agriculture is basically made by 3% of the farms. And the number of farms is declining precipitously every year. And it's those small farms that are turning into subdivisions.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, we're seeing it happen, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Everywhere, right? And why? Because you need massive scale to be viable under an industrial agriculture type framework. What I'm really excited about is that I think that, like, what we're doing, hopefully, will, you know, one of the principal reasons why people haven't adopted regenerative practices and that sort of thing is they can't see through the higher cost and their ability to be able to pass that on to consumers and create a viable business is really tough. But if you have a totally different margin structure where you have a 30-year solar PPA adjusted for inflation plus carbon removal, et cetera, like you can afford to take a little bit less margin on your agriculture side and still do amazing things. So like I feel like, you know, our goal is really to, you know, create a model that farmers can sort of pick the relevant piece of for them. And, you know, be the dumb guinea pig that will go out there and hopefully, you know, stumble upon like an amazing model by making all of the mistakes and help people get to a place where, you know, those small and medium sized farms are not disappearing and becoming subdivisions anymore, but they're amazing legacy assets that are passed on to the next generation. And then we're kicking ass for the planet and then we're building like awesome businesses as well. So to me, that's the vision, and that is the goal. And so if we can inspire, you know, just one person to try, you know, then, you know, we've been successful, and hopefully we can build like a really, you know, sustainable long-term business this way.
Well, I mean, who knows where I'll be in 25 years, but we have a 40-acre pasture that's in the family and been in my husband's side of the family for,
let's,
you know,
talk,
a few decades.
Like,
I'm like, this seems like what we should
Do.
Because you're right. It's like, you know, you do think of it. And you're like, can we afford to keep that? It's not even farmed right now. Like, what do you do with that? And how do you make it something that the family can hold on to? And your dad.
Why not have it paid for everybody's college? You know,
and it's, you know, we got 11 grandkids. Four of them are mine. So, you know, but it's a thought that you have, and we're not even a farming family, right? But you just think like, oh man, like you can't sustain that, and you want the kids to enjoy it, and it's wild and it's free and it's so cool. But like, how do you turn it into something that can be a legacy? And that's a hard nut to crack, I think. Even for people who aren't farming, like they just have this family land or this, you know, piece. And this is like a really cool and exciting way, I think, to kind of transform some of those spaces so they don't become.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, what's going to happen? Everybody's like, oh, I'm not really a farmer. It's just a land. It's, you know, and when you pass on, the kids are going to sell it if they don't have anything in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's
100%.
Not going to become a farm.
No.
You know,
no.
Probably not. You know, no. That's. It's sort of this false, you know, option that, you know, it's like, oh, I don't like solar, you know, and so let's, And it's like, I just want this beautiful farm that will be pristine and whatever. It's like, well, you know, a lot of times without another income source, that just is not, that's going to become a subdivision. Now those will become multi-residential apartments.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. And the options are limited. I mean, they're limited. Like, it's either development or it's something, you know what I mean? It's like blood, sweat, and tears or...
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I experienced it myself. Like, I get on a farm and then they're like, oh, yeah, go talk to the Kubota dealer and get yourself $50,000 in debt. Yeah. Like, and I was like, no, I'll rent the tractor whenever I need it. Like, why am I going to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so, but I can totally see how people get themselves in a pickle.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. It is. It's real tough.
Definitely. Mark, you know, we've talked about a lot of the different things that you are doing on your farm. Is there anything you haven't done yet that you're kind of exploring?
Well, so, okay. Here's where I talk about my Bitcoin mining strategy.
I wanted so to part ask of about,
our, you. Know. Yeah, yeah. So part of our solar strategy is that, like, I have had in my mind for a long time, like, I want to build my own power company, right? And, like, if I could just do it Lego-like by, like, adding panels and miners and then build up to where I have, like, you know, a utility. And so, you know, that's kind of fascinating to me. And so, like, if you think about the opportunity to arbitrage the price of power, you know, which varies quite significantly by the hour of the day, peak and non-peak times, you know, Bitcoin mining, which is basically an expression of energy and storage. If you combine those two and you think about applying a AI or machine learning such that you could develop an algorithm where you're maximizing the IRR at every single moment of that system. And then I'm really excited about battery technology. So, like, how do you bridge the time that the sun is not shining? And so... I'm crazy enough, I want to build a sand battery. And the reason why that's so cool in this context is because the biochar facility, each one of those 5-train RD pyrolysis reactors, it creates like 1.8 megawatts of potential energy from waste heat.
Really?
So if you can find a way to basically turn that waste heat into steam, and even more compelling, to store it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a sand battery can store it for 40 days. Like, the average battery is amazing if it can store it. Like, lithium ion was like 6.5 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
With basically sand in a silo.
Yeah. So, are they kind of like microgrids almost? Are you running like a, you know,
So the thing is, there's also a lot of amazing things that we can do behind the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like, well, okay, if the utility wants to slow roll us on the transmission infrastructure, whatever, I'm sorry, I'll just print money, man. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'll just cut out the middleman. I really believe that that's the way to maximally sort of use the power. And, you know, a lot of, you know, when you're doing solar development, a lot of it is you're just waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting for the permit for this or them to build the transmission improvement or bring you the transformer or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, once you have those panels and you can connect them directly to miners, man, you're making money that whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that is an area that I'm really interested in. And, you know, the other thing is I think that, like, distributed power is going to be super valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if we can have, you know, 30 sites that have 5 megawatts of community solar plus, you know, 3.5 megawatts of energy from waste heat, these are going to be really valuable assets to have if you believe that our power consumption due to AI models and other things is just that the demand curve for a long time has been really stable, but now it's like, and everybody's freaking out.
Yeah.
But if you're holding those assets, like, you're in a really good place. So that's another area that I'm really interested in, is like, you know, could we put these farms in areas that are close to data centers where, you know, we can not only provide power, but eliminate their carbon footprint, or at least defray a big portion of it. You know, the principal buyer in the carbon removal space is Microsoft, which also happens to be one of the largest data center operators, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting synergies. You know, if you think about this kind of more expansively, and like, why not have an amazing farm that's creating power if they're going to use it anyway, that's sequestering carbon and making awesome land. You know what I mean?
And like, making awesome land. I think you need a why not t-shirt. Do you have one? Because you, that's like, I don't know. Can we Christmas gifting? You need a carbon tree.
I need some branding professionals to help me out. But
Well, we've got a marketing specialist. Maybe we'll have to
get there. We go. I need some help. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And like, I honestly didn't think you could add another dimension to this already multi-layered kind
of. You know, I need to stop. And that's what my investors are like, just stop, just focus on whatever. And like, no, it all works together. Don't you understand?
Like a dodecahedron that's giving me that kind of, you know, in school when you're learning about.
That's just how my mind works, unfortunately.
No, fortunately, I think that's a win. I'm sorry, Earthoptics. I'm going to apprentice with Carbon Country. And
we'd love to have you.
Amazing. Cool stuff.
Yeah, this is a really, really cool convergence of like all of my different interests that I've never really brought to, like, I've been following different, you know, microinverter companies like a weirdo since like 2016 for some reason.
Nice.
But I have been. But it's really, really cool. I'm honestly very jealous of what you're doing. It sounds so exciting. And it's such like a novel approach to land stewardship. And it brings together, you know, time-tested technologies, if you will, such as sheep grazing, which, you know, humans have been doing for thousands of years. But it's also like Bitcoin mining, which has been around for, you know, less than a decade or a decade or whatever. And so it's a really, really cool marriage of old world, new world, but it just seems to work.
Yeah. And to me, like, it all comes together in my mind and creates this just really amazing sort of like ecosystem, you know, and hopefully we can make that work.
Definitely. Mark, where can people learn more about what you're doing?
You mentioned, I don't even have a website, but you can find me on LinkedIn. I post a lot of, you know, different stuff, try to post something every week about like what's going on. What we're trying to do is kind of build in public so that, you know, and it's been really effective. So find me on LinkedIn. I know like Mark Smith, they're like, it's basically like you're anonymous. But like if you look up Mark Smith and Carbon Country, you'll find me. And that's probably the best way to get in touch with me, and then, you know, shoot me a question or whatever. And I'd love to just, you know, talk and collaborate with the community that's thinking about these things. So
definitely. Yeah. And I know people, they'll know when they found you, cause it'll be a video of, you know, your livestock guardian dogs or
attacking my sheep and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that video yesterday, actually. I was like, oh my gosh, that looked kind of
you know, crazy. I mean, these are the things that they don't tell you, right, about the training process. Like, you mm-hmm. know, a couple of sheep's ears need to be sacrificed, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, on the last episode, Piper and I were reminiscing on some projects, and I didn't even bring up, you know, the project we were talking about. I remember coming around a bend, we were sampling a ranch, and there was like a big dead cow just sitting there. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect to, you know, see this on this project. And that's just the nature of the beast, you know.
It's never a dull moment. Mm-hmm. When you're, you know, you have all sorts of different livestock running around.
Yep.
But it's fun. And honestly, like, that's the best part of my day. Like, I try to take 1 hour at least to go do some farm work, get my hands dirty, pet the doggies, move the sheep, blah, 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 move, you know, do actual farmers carries with 50 pounds of water, you know, that kind of thing. And it's awesome. And I just love being out there and doing it. So I get a lot from that. Like, and it helps kind of recharge me when I have to go back and, you know, type on the computer.
Yes. My husband refers to me as the guy in the chair, but he means the girl in the chair. But, you know, there's every superhero, then there's the person in the chair, like, turn left, turn right, do this, do that. Them, like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm like, I think I like this, but I think one day I want to be out of the chair, you know, and like maybe
get out of the chair for like an hour. It'll transform your life, I promise you.
Yeah, definitely. And I can also attest to having the last name Smith and it being impossible, even with the first name Piper, which I think is like more unique and like grateful for that. But yes,
there's... I mean, yeah, there's like when phone books existed, there were like whole phone books of my name. So, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, awesome. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been awesome. Super informative. I mean, we went into like kind of facets of farming I didn't know existed and don't exist yet and that you're kind of pioneering. So we're grateful to have you on the show. Listeners, you can find Mark on LinkedIn and you can also listen to this podcast, or you already have, I guess, if you've made it to this point. Any closing words, Mark? Anything you didn't cover that you want to leave our listeners with before we close out?
Well, I would love to. I'm really, you know, we're still learning. And so be really open to collaborating with people that are thinking about doing cool stuff. So, you know, like I've been talking to people who are, you know, putting pools of tilapia to like do, you know, compost from fish poop and like how could we combine it with biochar? Like all of those sort of things, super interesting. Like, why not? Let's look at it. So if people have like ideas or iterations or potential partnerships or are interested in getting involved, like we'd love to talk with them. And you know, this is a very iterative process. And, you know, I approach this as a student. So I know there's always more things that I can learn. And I am totally a rookie farmer. So I'm sure there's a ton of stuff, like all your farmers that are watching be like, ah, shut up. Like, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. You know what I mean? So I'm very open to that. I'm sure people have lots of good suggestions. And so bring them on.
Love it. A rookie farmer, not to be confused with a beginning farmer who must have 3 years of experience.
I'm definitely not yet a beginning farmer. 2 years from now, I'll be ready to be a beginning farmer.
Yes,
so.
Yeah, it's a 3 year minimum running pace. Well, hey, Mark, we are so grateful to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us. For our listeners, remember to like, subscribe, and share this episode. And as always, stay grounded.
Awesome.